long have you been in New York?
Since Saturday night, and I'm going back on Saturday. It's coming Saturday.
We were asking a little bit about whether his books had been translated into English, and you were telling me about...
Well, two of his... a play that he wrote in Bulgaria was translated into English and was put on in 1974. It was called Let's Go Under the Rainbow, and it was about Georgie's experiences when he was in a sanatorium as a student. And then he wrote a play in English after coming to the West called The Archangel Michael, and that won a prize at the Edinburgh Festival also in 1974. And after he died, I got both those plays put on again. But I've been trying to get his some of the novels he wrote in Bulgaria, which were translated into English, not terribly well, published. But really, it's rather difficult because they were written for a particular audience, and he was having to sort of cut out of the censorship line all the time, and therefore a lot of the sort of subtleties are meaningless to a Western audience. And, I mean, this, I think, is his masterpiece, because for the first time in his life, he could write what he really wanted to say while addressing a Bulgarian audience.
Mm.
Has that answered your question?
Yes, it does. Mm. Your late husband, of course, is, despite the plays, is not that well known to audiences in America, but, of course, we do know of that terrible incident on the Waterloo Bridge. Why don't you tell us about, is the correct pronunciation Georgie, or is it a hard G?
Well, it's Georgie in Eastern Europe, but I always called him Georgie, and most of his friends in the West did.
Georgie.
So I call him Georgie, if you like.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about Georgi Markov, and he was an important writer in Bulgaria, and... tell me a little bit about him and what he wrote and why he was significant in that country.
He trained as a chemical engineer, but I think he always wanted to be a writer. When he was a student, he took part in a student conspiracy against the regime, and he was imprisoned, and that had a very profound effect on him. And he came out of that thinking that if he had to exist in such a system, he was going to rise to the top of it. And in 1962, he published his first novel, Men, which made him famous overnight. He was awarded the top literary prize, and it was translated into every East European language. Why Men became such a favourite of the party was it blamed the failings of the system, not on the system itself, but on individuals, which was exactly the right line to take at that particular moment. From that moment on, Georgie was a very privileged person. He had a villa, he had a BMW car, and most privileged of all, he was allowed to travel to the West. One occasion, he actually travelled to the West as cultural representative of Bulgaria.
What were some of the other writings that he had while he was living in Bulgaria?
Let's Go Under the Rainbow, a play which was very very successful there. His first play was called The Cheese Merchant's Good Lady. He wrote about half a dozen plays in all, and maybe half a dozen novels. One of his most famous novels was called The Women of Warsaw.
What started to go wrong? Why did he become disillusioned with life in Bulgaria? What happened to him?
Basically, he was somebody who couldn't compromise. I think that was the most striking thing about his character, and he could only compromise with the system and with himself for a certain amount of time. And he started writing plays and novels that were more and more outspoken against the system. One of his plays was actually singled out for censure in an article by the president, Todor Zhivkov. And in 1969, a year after the invasion of Czechoslovakia, he had a play which came on called The Man Who Was I. And he knew it was going to be banned, and it had to be given a preview in front of the cultural committee there. And halfway through the play, some friends came to Georgie and they said, "You're in trouble, you have to leave, you must get out." And he did, he left Bulgaria that day. He had an exit visa for Italy because of his privileged position, and he just left.
He fled?
He fled, yes. He fled to Italy, first of all.
What did he take with him in that short notice?
He took, luckily, he took manuscripts of plays and novels. He didn't bring his diaries. He'd kept diaries for 15 years, and he had to burn them when he left. And they were the basis of his memoirs, but he remembered everything. And in 1975, he started telling those memoirs over Radio Free Europe.
He was threatened with arrest. Is that correct?
He was.
Is that why he left?
He was threatened with arrest, yes. And after he left, his property was confiscated, and he was sentenced to 6.5 years in absentia.
He went to Italy. Then what happened?
He went to Italy and stayed with his brother, who defected some years earlier. And then he went to Germany for a short time. And then he came to England in 71, and he joined the Bulgarian section of the BBC's external services, which was, we met at the BBC's external services where we both worked. And besides working for the BBC, he also started writing for the German radio station Deutsche Welle, for the Bulgarian section there. And in 75, he started writing for Radio Free Europe also.
Was he doing these broadcasts in English?
No, he was doing them in Bulgarian. His English wasn't nearly good enough.
And he was reading his memoirs on the radio?
No, he would send his he'd write his memoirs, and then he would send them to Munich, to the headquarters of Radio Free Europe, mm-hmm. and somebody else would broadcast them.
So his memoirs were being broadcast on Radio Free Europe?
They were being broadcast week by week over a period of 2.5 years.
And he was living in London at this point?
He was living in London at this point. And part of the memoirs are a collection of talks in which he described his meetings with President Todor Zhivkov. He was a personal protege of Zhivkov, and it was after he started these particular series of talks that he received warnings that a decision had been taken by the Bulgarian Politburo to kill him.
He knew this?
He knew this, yes.
What happened on that day, September 7th, 1978?
He'd been receiving warnings for several months that he was going to be killed because of what he was writing for Radio Free Europe. And he took great precautions. A Bulgarian who professed to be a friend had telephoned him, always through his brother, the message has been relayed through his brother, to say that he was going to be poisoned, that the poison would be undetectable, that he would develop a very high fever, and it would look as if he'd got a very violent form of influenza. Eventually the Bulgarian came to see us in London, and he told in more detail about this plan. But they kept saying that, oh, well, they're going to make an attempt on your life now, and then it wouldn't happen. They did that about twice. He was supposed to go to Germany to Radio Free Europe, and he received a message to say they're going to try and do it then, and he actually cancelled the trip. And then when we were on holiday together in Italy with our daughter, he received a message to say that they were going to make an attempt there. Nothing happened. So by the time the attempt was actually made, the attack was made, he was off guard, and I think that was, they'd deliberately done that. What happened was that he was crossing Waterloo Bridge on his way to do an evening shift for the BBC, and he was passing a bus stop, and he felt a jab in the top of his right thigh, just a little jab, hardly noticeable. He turned round, and there was a man behind him who said, "I'm sorry," in a foreign accent, and dropped an umbrella. And I know this has become celebrated as the umbrella murder, but I never got the impression when Georgie told me about it that the pellet which was embedded in his thigh was fired from an umbrella gun. I always got the impression that it was actually a gas gun, and that the assassin dropped the umbrella as a cover to hide his face. But of course the press loved the image of the foreign assassin using this most British of all symbols, the umbrella.
Until that day, had you and Georgi Markov lived in a certain degree of fear in London? Were you living in London?
We were living in London. Yes, we were. But you see, you get used to it in a way. You can get used to almost anything. We were very careful. We never invited anybody to the house who we didn't trust. And Georgie would never eat at the house of anybody he didn't trust, because we'd been... These warnings that Georgie had been given gave the very strong impression that the poison would be administered orally, and I think that was deliberate, because I think the man who gave the warnings was not a friend. I think he was an agent of the Bulgarian authorities, and the idea was to frighten Georgie as much as possible before he was actually killed.
There's still a certain degree of mystery around Georgie's death, though, isn't there?
Not really. The police, who investigated the case exhaustively for 6 months, were absolutely convinced that he was killed by them. There's no doubt whatsoever in their minds. Every piece of evidence they got pointed to that. And they've told me that they believe that sooner or later they're going to be able to make a statement.
What was it in Georgi Markov's memoirs that were so threatening to Bulgaria?
Well, it's very hard to understand why they were so threatening, because we are lucky enough to live in an open society. Bulgaria is a closed society, and if you have somebody who is broadcasting memoirs where they're kind of saying, this is how it is, this is the truth, this is how you're living, this is what you have to put up with it, that person is regarded as being very dangerous indeed. And what I think was most dangerous of all was that when he was describing his meetings with Zhivkov, he was looking at Zhivkov, who's built a personality cult around himself, as an ordinary man with ordinary human failings. He was very fair to Zhivkov. He wasn't damning him or anything, but he was just looking at him as an ordinary person, and that was unforgivable.
You are, Mrs. Markov, keeping the image of your husband alive. Here's a translation of The Truth That Killed with an introduction by you. Are you planning to bring out in English other works of Georgi Markov in the future? I imagine you have all of his material.
I have all of his material, yes. I hope that I'll be able to do that. I think that this book has engendered great interest in Georgi Markov as a writer rather than Georgi Markov as the victim of a bizarre crime. And I think it'll be not too difficult to get those other works published in the future.
I thank you very much for coming here to CBS and telling us your husband's story, and I hope that Americans will have the chance to read more of Georgi Markov in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.